So I'm talking about two monads. First of all, as opposed to yesterday, we were very lax, and we allowed ourselves to do everything up to isomorphism or equivalence, as the case may be. Today it's not like that. Today we're strict, right? So everything is strict until I tell you otherwise. So a two monad is in both a two category and a two functor and some two natural transformations, and they satisfy the usual equations for monads. There's no messing around, no laxness at all. So what are some structures we can describe using two monads? Using two monads on cat, the two categories, functors and natural transformations, you can describe things like categories with finite limits, distributive categories, monoidal categories, braided monoidal. If you want to talk about things like monoidal closed categories, you can't describe them in terms of a two monad and cat, essentially because you've got this internal HOM which has a covariant part and a contravariant part, so you can't make it fully functorial, but you can make it functorial on the isomorphisms. So it's also interesting to look at two functors on what I call cat G, which is the two category of categories, functors, and natural isomorphisms. And so in this context, we can certainly describe all the same things we could describe over here, but you get some extra stuff, like, for instance, monoidal closed categories, Cartesian closed, toposes. As well as all these structures, there's some more that we might want to talk about. We might want to talk about something like strict monoidal categories. Or maybe categories with strictly associative pullbacks. Or in this column, something like, I'll call them closed, strict monoidal. Categories. So the ones below the line here differ from the ones above the line because, roughly speaking, they involve equations between objects. So for example, in a strict monoidal category, you've got the equation that says that A tends to B tends to C is equal to A tends to B tends to C. In structures above the line, you have no such situation. So we like to think of the ones above the line as being somehow flexible, and the ones below the line as being not flexible. And what I want to do today is give a mathematical definition of the notion of flexible, and then prove as a theorem that if you can give a presentation for a two monad, for the structure defined by a two monad involving no equations between objects, then the two monad is in fact flexible. Okay, so that's the program. First of all, a little bit of two-dimensional monad theory. So this is due to Blackwell, myself, and Power. The context to look at here is there's various contexts you can look at, but let's, for today, take a locally finitely presentable two category. I should have said, twice in a row I've forgotten to mention my joint authors. This is joint work with Steve Lack and John Power. We have a locally finitely presentable two category K and a finitary monetary 2 monad t one k. We can define the two category TLGS. This is the Eilenberg-Mohr two category. So its objects are algebras. Once again, these are strict. You keep it strict until I tell you otherwise. The morphisms are strict, and there's an obvious notion of two cell there. We can also talk about a slightly bigger two category called T-alg. This has the same objects, but the morphisms are what we call the pseudomorphisms. So if I have algebras here, A and B, an honest morphism of algebras would involve a commutative square like this. For a pseudomorphism, we have an isomorphism inside that square satisfying some axioms. Okay, so obviously TLGS sits inside TLs as an inclusion, which is bijective, which is the identity on objects. And the first theorem of Blackwell-Kelley-Power is that this inclusion, TLGS and TLG, has a left adjoint. Sending an algebra A to a new algebra that we call A prime. So this means that we set up, in particular, bijection between strict maps from A prime to B and pseudo maps that I write with a squiggle like that from A to B. So if you like, this is this A prime classifies pseudomorphisms out of A. Okay, you don't really need to know where this A prime comes from, but I did want to just put in a token mention of the word descent. You can construct, this is not the way Blackwell-Kelley and Power did it, but you can, if you choose, construct A prime as a co-descent object. So this is just the dual motion to the descent objects I mentioned in my talk yesterday, looking like this. We've got t cubed A, t squared A, t A prime. A co-descent object in TLGS. So if you don't know about co-descent objects, that's not important for today. So that's the first theorem. For the second theorem of Blackwell-Kelley and Power, so this pseudomorphism classifier involves the unit, which we call P, will be a pseudomorphism from A into A prime. I've certainly got the strict map 1, so we get down here Q, the co-unit. The theorem says that I've got QP equals 1. The theorem says that PQ is isomorphic to 1 in TLG. So this A prime is actually equivalent to A in this very tight sense. Okay. For an algebra A, it's easy to see that the following are equivalent. 1, Q, section, in TLGS, right, it's got a section TLG, given my P, it's a condition that it should have a section in TLGS. So this is the first condition. Two, Q has a section, as before, and this forms part of an equivalence. And finally, three, that is a retract of B prime for some B. These three are equivalent, and in this case, we then say that A, the algebra A, is flexible. And so the flexible algebras have many important properties, but one fact about them is that if you have a flexible algebra A, so if A is flexible, and you have some pseudomorphism from A into B, then you can replace it by an isomorphic strict isomorphism. That's one of the key points about flexible algebras. Couldn't decide whether to say this or not, but maybe I will. So another word for flexible is cofibrant. I mean, flexible algebras have there's a tendency for them to be the cofibrant object for certain suitable model structures, but it sort of depends a little bit on the context. I mean, in the case of two monads, which is coming up there, that's a good use of the word cofibrant. More generally, I'm not quite sure. I think that was Steve talking, not Max. Yeah. Okay. How are we? How are we going? So, first example, if C is a small 2 category, and this is the set of objects, then we get a 2 monadic adjunction like this. It's easy to see that this, when we restrict along here, we have a left adjoint, and these are the algebras for the induced 2 monad, the flexible algebras. Are called flexible weights. Weights meaning weights for certain co-limits. So this is, we're talking here about weighted co-limits. If you're not terribly familiar with those, don't worry too much. The important thing to know, this is a theorem now due to Bird, Kelly, Power and Street, which says that the flexible co-limits are those generated in a suitable sense by four particular types, co-products, co-inserters. So co-inserters, a two-dimensional sort of limit. The way that works is this. If I've got a parallel pair of arrows, F and G from A to B, say, then the co-inserter is the universal arrow from B to C, equipped with a two-cell like this. B, P, lambda, say. That's the second class. The third is the coequifiers. This is another characteristically two-dimensional sort of co-limit. in this case, given initial data like this, FG, and a pair of two cells in there, just the universal map P from B to C, making the two cells equal. That's the third class, and the fourth class, whose role I don't entirely understand. It's sort of, it seems like a little thing, but somehow drawing in the splittings of idempotents. That sometimes seems to have a big effect here. So, the theorem says that the flexible co-limits are all those you can build up using these four concrete types of co-limits. And let's squeeze onto this board the second key result of Bird, Kelly, Power and Street, which has two parts, free algebras, now flexible, which is pretty easy. And the second part is that flexible co-limits of flexibles are flexible in fact. You get a converse to the second part using the description I mentioned over there of a prime as a co-descent object. The co-descent object is a flexible co-limit. You can build it up using co-inserters and co-equifiers, so that way you can describe every flexible algebra as a retract of a co-descent object of frees. And so the flexible algebras are such the closure under flexible co-limits of the free algebras. Okay, our second example. Of a two monad for which we want to talk about flexibility of the algebras, this is the two category of finitary two monads on cat, and it's monadic over the two category of finitary endofunctors. So, once again, we can talk about the flexible algebras for this composite two monad. And the two monad is just the free monoid monad. Flexible algebras are the flexible monads. That's the definition. So remember, I wanted to do two things. I wanted to tell you what the flexible algebras are, the flexible monads are. That's this. I also wanted to tell you that if you can present a two monad in terms of operations and equations, but not using equations between objects, then the two monad is flexible. Well, that essentially comes down to this theorem. I just have to tell you how to interpret it. So, to do that, let me describe how you can give a presentation for the two monad whose algebras are categories with a terminal object. Categories with a terminal object. First of all, if I have some category A, I've got to give an object which we're going to try to make to be the terminal object. So this is corresponds to giving a single nullary it's a category with a single nullary operation in our structure, and you can build up a free in fact, a free monad on cat whose algebras are the pointed categories, it's pretty obvious, right? It's 1 plus blank. The next step we have to do is for each object A in T, we should give a morphism into this object little t, which is going to be the terminal object, and we want these to be natural. Okay, there's another free monad which corresponds to whose algebras are the categories equipped with a single unary operation. And you can get a pair of monad morphisms corresponding to picking out the T and picking out the A. And if we now form the co-inserter here, this co-inserter in the category of two monads, the algebras for this S are the categories equipped with a particular object T and a natural family of maps from A into T. Finally, we need to impose an equation. We need to say that the component at T of this morphism tor is the identity on T, and this time we're going to be forming a certain co-inserter. Like these morphisms here correspond to two cells of monads, co-equifier, and we form this co-equifier, resulting two monad T. There will be the two monad whose algebras are categories with a terminal object. So the idea is that you can, if you were to add operations of the object type, you can use coproducts. If you were to add morphisms between given operations, use co-inserters. And if you were to impose equations between arrows, not between objects, you can use co-equifiers in that way. And the theorem is proved.